Up next, we've got an interview with Jack Lau, one of the owners of Double Shovel Cidery in Anchorage. Jack, how are you doing today, sir?
Great. Thanks for having me on, Bill.
Oh, thanks for taking the time to talk with us. So, first time we've had you on, you guys are a cidery, which we don't have too many of up here in Alaska. So describe your operation. You know, what are you guys doing? Where do you get your apples? How do you process them? Everything.
Sure. Yeah, just about like any other amateur brewers. We were amateur cider makers at one time, and we started experimenting with a bunch of different apple juices, local and from Pacific Northwest. And now with the volume of cider that we make, Alaska the apples on the market don't meet the demand. The supply doesn't meet the demand. So to use Alaska only. So the fall, we have fall harvest, and we'll get a bunch of different varietals in and press our own apples and make Alaska apple cider. But most of the time we're having to grab apples from the Pacific Northwest. So it's similar to brewing, where you take some sugar and add yeast and you end up with alcohol.
Fresh my memory, what you don't need to do is mash, right?
Yeah.
Because your sugars are already available. So basically you can just press the juice and add the yeast I guess you would boil it first, right? Or not?
We don't have to convert any starches, you're correct.
Okay.
So we start with the simple sugars from the apples or any other fruits that we'll bring into the picture. Sometimes we use some honey and make sizers.
You're not trying to isomerize hops. So do you even boil it at all?
So we do a few different hopped varietals. And we also do some caramelization. So there are times we do a boil. Our normal ciders don't use a boil.
Okay.
Yeah. So we do some dry hopping. We do some isomeritizing. And then some caramelizing.
Interesting. So how long is your fermentation do you typically need?
So it can be any time between 4 weeks to 6 months, depending on what we're shooting for. We try a much longer wild fermentation with the local apples. And we'll use manufactured yeasts for our bigger mainstay products, like the Appalanche or the Forget-Me-Hopped.
Okay. And these yeasts, you're typically warm fermenting, cold fermenting? What's your fermentation look like?
It's a big range. We'll raise the temperature up when we don't like a certain aroma, or if we want to speed up the fermentation for some reason. Maybe it's to get more movement in the tank. But lower temperatures, you tend to keep more of the aroma. So it just depends on what variety we're making. If the apples are really special, you know, what we tend to do it at a colder temperature, just to make sure that more of the characteristics from the apple come through into the final product.
So do you guys use primarily cider apples, right? I mean, my understanding is there's different varieties, right? You've got like eating apples, and then there's whole varieties that are way too hard and sour to eat, but make great cider. Is that...
Yep, you nailed it. Yeah. So a lot of the culinary apples are high in sugar and maybe light in acid. We like things that are a good cider apple would be really heavy in sugar, really heavy in tannins, and really heavy in acidity. Sometimes you can pick and mix and match the different apples, which we get a lot from our local orchards that'll have two of those characteristics. So we might end up doing a blend prior to fermentation to grab the most of those three properties.
So are people growing cider apples up commercially here in Alaska? I know there's not a ton, obviously, but is it an area that people are moving into to satisfy your demand?
So we've been helping some orchards grow by bringing in our own rootstock and then planting planting apple trees on their property. And then we helped a farmer down in Kasilof start an orchard there that is exclusively cider apples that come to Double Shovel. That's a newer orchard, so they haven't really matured. This is the first year we've harvested from them, but we usually obtain about somewhere between 6 and 10,000 pounds of cider apples a year locally, and that's from 3 to 4 orchards. And then we also get tannic pear from Fairbanks. So this year I think we got 2,000 pounds of tannic.
So you guys do a Perry as well?
Yeah, we'll do a Perry cider. Perry sizers and Perry cider. Right now we have an imperial pear from that we use that tannic pear juice from on tap. So it.
Oh, that's great, because that's one of the things I'm always interested in is having our, whether it's a brewery or cidery or whatever, being able to draw from local, you know, local ingredients. So to help support our local farmers and stuff like that, you know, I'd love to see us get a, you know, a real micro maltings going for the, on the brewery side of things. So we, you know, growing two-row barley up around Delta Junction or somewhere and producing that. And it's great that you guys are helping establish, you know, cider apple orchards around the state to supply you with what you need.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty huge effort to get these orchards stocked up on cider apples. It's been a lot of fun for us all. And using local products, you're right on. We need a sustainable Alaska, and as much as we can use local, we do. So we have in February, we're going to come out with our Crimson and Mint, which is our rhubarb mint cider. And the rhubarb was all grown down there in the Kenai. And then we're growing the mint with our vertical farm that we have next to Double Shovel. And so we'll grow all the mint here over the next month and a half ourselves. And so the batch will be... The cider from that batch will be coming from the apple juice will be coming from the Pacific Northwest for that specific batch, but all the other ingredients will be grown in Alaska, which is pretty cool.
Excellent, excellent. So tell our listeners a little bit of those who haven't made it up to Anchorage to check you out. Tell them a little bit about your operation there in Anchorage, your tap room, and what they could expect if they want to stop by when they're up in Anchorage.
Sure. Yeah. So we're off of 58th and 58th Avenue, just off of Arctic, between Arctic and C Street, south of Potter. It's an industrial area. Most people pull in, they're kind of like, I think I'm in the wrong spot. And then usually you see a smile on the face when they open the tap door and are surprised by a nice kind of eclectic tap room, all repurposed materials. And then at the tap room, we have about 10 fermenters and bright tanks combined, little small little canning line. It's at only in 4 units, so we have 4,000 square feet, not a huge operation in terms of footprint. We just have to be real efficient with what we have. And then in the tap room, we have usually 13 ciders on tap and some non-alcoholic options. And the ingredients we use are really high end. So a lot of times it doesn't make sense for us to distribute all the products. So the locals just come through the tap room to kind of buy the items that aren't at the big chain stores or that we don't distribute through our distributor, who's K&L. So like right now we have a hop cider. We have IPC, another hop cider, which is our play on Indian Pale Ale. We have our mainstay Appalachian Extra Dry Cranberry. We have a Christmas Cranberry. It's spiced up with some cinnamon and orange essence. That Imperial Pear I was telling you about. Blueberry Sour. What else we have? Pineapple. Botanical. We have a botanical sizer, so we make that one with apple juice and honey. So it's a cider mead. And then the influence on that was gin. So we use a lot of like gin botanicals when we make that one. On the top of my head, those are the ones we have on tap now. So it's pretty cool when people come in and get to try so many different flavors, variations. And we try to keep it really dry. We ferment almost all the sugar out. Some of the ciders we ferment 100% of the fermentable sugars out. The really dry ciders seem to do well with folks that have kind of like autoimmune diseases and stuff like that. And that was a little bit of an influence on how we got into cider making specifically. So we kind of stick to that, and all the products are gluten-free. So, a relatively healthy option in the craft alcohol industry.
So you mentioned that you're distributing through K&L. For the folks that can't get to Anchorage, let's talk a little bit about what you're distributing. I mean, I've seen some of your stuff on taps at various places, and I know you're canning. So what are you distributing through K&L?
K&L mostly just distributes our forget-me-hopped and our Appalanche semi-dry cider. We do give them some kind of specialty ciders every once in a while, but like I was saying, with the cost of some of these ingredients, the margins are really tight when you're looking at distributing. So very rarely do we send out other ones through them. Now, we do also work with Three Bears, and they get some specialty cider. Right now they have our blueberry sour in their stores. So that's a good option. Is Three Bears usually carries about one specialty cider at a time.
Option is that on tap or in cans at Three Bears?
No, that would be in cans.
Okay.
Yeah, cans. Yep. And then we usually have 8 to 10 varieties in cans only available either at Double Shovel or Anchorage Cider House. So that we've partnered down there. So
how are you guys handling COVID-19? I'm sure this hasn't been a great year for you any more than it's been for anybody else.
Sure. Yeah, it's been extremely tough year for everyone. We've been super fortunate with all the local Double Shovel fans, Alaskan fans, every town in Alaska, it seems like. When they're in town, they swing by and buy that four-pack directly from us, and that makes a huge difference. So they've really kept our business alive. And then the other thing we did is we pivoted and started canning a lot of the products we had never canned before, which has really been beneficial.
What are you guys using for your canning line?
Canning line, we have an ABE Lin can. Okay. So it does 24 cans a minute. For our two mainstays to keep the cost of product down, cost of goods sold down, we have printed cans, the cans printed, which is the cheapest option. Mm-hmm. And then we order them in 125,000 quantities at a time. All the other specialty ones we have wrapped with a shrink wrap. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Looking ahead, assuming we get through with this COVID thing in 6 or 7 months, hopefully, what are you guys' longer term plans? What do you see? Where do you see you guys going in 2 or 3 or 5 years, something like that?
Yeah. So the first line of our business plan, before I left my last job, I came into Double Shovel full time and was to basically help with the economy in Alaska. Is we want to be part of the solution post oil. Post natural resources, so it would be a small sliver, but we wanted to make an awesome cider that that every Alaskan gets the opportunity to get first, but then we can ship outside, export it to the States and start bringing some cash flow back into the state. So that's kind of our goal, and we're going to continue on that plan. We're doing some other fun things where, we're doing some Palmos, which would be the apple version of a port wine. So we're aging seven of those right now, seven different barrels of Palmo right now. And we're going to do some special releases in the new year. And then we're looking at a little bit of an expansion here probably in the summertime. bring
at,
some
at your current
bring some
location.
More, yep, at our current location, bring some more tanks in and make more cider.
Cool.
So those are two kind of fun things. The other really, really cool thing that we're doing is one of the byproducts from fermentation, CO2, and it just goes to atmosphere. It's wasted. And then we have to go purchase food grade CO2 from a gas supplier to carbonate our beverage. That's not the purest CO2, it's food grade, but it could be better. There's some dissolved oxygen content and some other things in it that aren't ideal. So we worked with Earthly Labs and they finished the design and they're fabricating right now a CO2 recapture system for us.
Excellent.
So here in February, we'll be able to capture all of our CO2. And then we're making 4 times more CO2 than we need. So we'll be supplying that some of our CO2 to another brewery, and a vertical, greens operation.
Excellent. Yeah. I know Alaskan Brewing did that a few years ago. They went to CO2 capture so they could quit importing CO2. So that's excellent that you guys are going to do that.
Yeah, they're the front runners in that for sure. Yeah, they did awesome.
Let me ask you a question that's always near and dear to my heart. I lived in London for 3 years, and I got very fond of their cask-conditioned cider that they had. You guys have any thoughts, plans that you might, go that way and serve stuff naturally fermented, bottle conditioned or cask conditioned?
Yeah. Yep. So, that is on our radar. There's a lot of European influence in that area for sure. And we're keen on bringing that kind of cider culture to Alaska. So we have some plans that most immediate plans is we've had a lot of success with our bourbon aged ciders. So we're going to start a program where that's a little bit more consistent. And then just for now that's where we're at. We don't have any other plans other than it's on our radar.
Okay. Well, Jack, appreciate you taking the time to talk.
Yeah. Well, we love talking cider. That'd be the thing for any of the listeners that want to come in and talk cider. We're always available. There's one of us is usually here and always happy to give a tour and show people around.
What are your hours like now here?
Share our passions. Noon to 8.
6 days a week?
7.
7 days a week. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yep. Okay. Well, thanks, Jack, for taking the time with us. Really appreciate it. And hope everybody will check you guys out next time they're up in Anchorage or buy some of your stuff in the stores.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it. Stay healthy.
You too. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. We'll be right back with our next segment. Up next, we've got an interview with Rhonda Langley, the brewer at Growler Bay Brewing Company in Valdez that just opened last month, I think. So, hey, Rhonda, how are you doing today?
Well, hi, Bill. I'm doing just great.
Thanks for taking the time to talk to us. So, hey, Growler Bay, you guys have been in the works for a long time because I remember back in 2015 when I wrote my book about Alaska history, in the epilogue I said, and Growler Bay Brewing Company is working to get open in Valdez, and that was 2015. So tell us a little bit about yourself and about Growler Bay.
Yeah, that's right. It really puts a perspective and ages me a little bit. How long this dream has just been alive. I came up to Alaska to go to school. Just have always had kind of that love of the field of science, just pretty much you can name it earth sciences, but I kind of was into the animal sciences back then. I wanted to be a veterinarian. So that didn't pan out, but along that same path, I'm doing a lot of microbiology, really getting not just the macro side of biology, but the micro side. And I just was fascinated by that. And along came brewing, in my life. My friend and I took a course there at UAF, beginning Zymergy, and I was hooked. That's kind of where my journey began. And boy, that was back in believe it or not, 2004, I took that class. I knew I wanted more, and I from there, I met Scott Stylish. He took me under his wing, teaching me about the BJCP Beer Judge Certification Program, getting me involved with brewing beer and entering beer and judging beer and all those things. And I tell you, it just opened up a whole new world for me, and I just was like, this is just, it filled me with such joy, and I could just take it to whatever level I wanted to. Brewing really does it. You can do extract brewing, which is just perfect and fine, but you can always take it to these other levels, which is what I love about the brewing profession.
Yeah, that's one of the things I always say about homebrewing as a hobby is you can spend as much or as little on it as you want. It's kind of like golf. There's always more money that you can put into it. So tell us about your brewery now that you finally open.
So our brewery is here in Growler Bay, and we founded this in 2013. We were hoping at that time we had found a building, but unfortunately I broke my ankle, and that when I went in for surgery, I also at the same time found out that I was pregnant. And life throws us things of this nature and takes you off course sometimes. And so there I was, not able to get the building, but we still work towards it because I also have been always applying for scholarships. I'm a huge, you know, always just try for things. And I got lots of no's, but I finally also in that year, I actually was awarded a scholarship from the Siebel Scholarship that was the World Brewing Academy and the A.B. Vickers Scholarship, and that led me to the concise course in brewing. So while I couldn't move very well, I could still focus on getting better beer, so and continuing to look for a building. And then finally, in 2016, we just had a really hard time finding a space that we could afford here in Valdez, and finally we found this amazing building, which is an old Valdez building, meaning it's a turn-of-the-century building that survived the tsunami and the earthquake and got moved to Valdez, where it is now. It's so unique in its own right. The fact that it had this basement that we could use for our brewery is really where we were like, okay, this is going to be it. We can afford this building. We can make this happen. It's not going to be an easy building to have a brewery in because it's three stories, which is not your typical brewery, but we've made it work, and not everything's always easy, that's for sure.
Well, good. So tell us a little bit about your brewing system that you've got there.
We have two brewing systems. We have our pilot brewing system, which is a 10-gallon, 6-barrel system, and that's just our little system. It's Blickman and SS put together, so they're working as a team. But our 3-barrel system is the main nano system that we have in place, and it's a stout system, and this is all electric. We've had to go with electric because of how the building is made, because we're in the basement. So we chose electric, and it has a Hearns coil involved, which is a heat exchange recirculating mass system, and that's the same as our small system too. So we're just basically taking a small system and ramping it up to these 3-barrel, which is still small. It's a nano brewery. We are not currently brewing on the 3-barrel because everything's not quite hooked up, because we certainly have been affected by COVID just like everyone else. And so we had to just start brewing on the smaller system and decided to just brew with our hearts and start making these small batches go out. So that's what I've been brewing on, trying to keep up as we get the bigger 3-barrel system going.
Well, there's been pretty big breweries that have started on that same size system. I think that's something similar to what Dogfish Head started on, if I remember. You're selling everything there out of your tap room. What sort of stylistically, what kind of beers do you like to brew? Are you favor Belgians, British, lagers? What do you like to make?
That's always a hard question for me in some ways, because I really enjoy, as a brewer, brewing all the different styles. You know, like I said, when I became looking at all the beer judging things, it just was like, wow, there's so many styles out there. And it's just like, you know, it's hard to focus on all of them, on what one you really want to do and things. But of course, I started brewing with lager yeast, and I really enjoyed what I was getting from that yeast style. And so I certainly plan to do plenty with lager yeast, but also I really think English, like browns, I have one of those on tap, and people are really excited about that because they don't see those enough, they say. And so I'm just listening to what people are wanting, and I'm brewing those. At the same time, obviously, IPAs are big, so I have two IPAs, and I had a stout, and I also had a rye winter ale, which was brewed with bitterless dark malts. It was just more like a light dark beer, you know what I mean? People really liked that. And I had a spruce tip beer on tap, too, and people really seem to enjoy those. But yeah, I definitely have a lot of English malts on, and I have a lot of pils malts, and, of course, just your regular trying to brew up some of these American styles and things. So I really am just trying to kind of brew a lot of different styles for everybody.
So looking ahead, let's say 5 or 6 months, hopefully we've put all this COVID stuff behind us. You guys get your new, or you get your three-barrel system hooked up. What sort of operating hours and such are you planning on come the summer? Honestly, it's been a long time since the last time I was in Valdez, but I assume you guys have a tour season just like everybody else. Is that what you guys are really looking to focus towards?
I think when we make it to late spring, summer, you know, we'll definitely be brewing on the three-barrel system we have, and hopefully we can be open at 5 days a week, you know, would be nice by the summer for sure if we can have more tourists and things this year. If we can be open 5 to 6 days a week, possibly from, you know, anywhere from, I don't know right now, but anywhere from noon to 8 or 3 to 8 or something would be what we would do. And we're brewing enough beer, of course.
Well, I've got aspirations of making it over for the summer. So it's been, like I said, it's been a long time since the last time I was in Valdez. So be great to come over and check you guys out.
Oh, that would be wonderful. I definitely would love to meet you in person. I remember you reaching back a long time ago to me when I was in Fairbanks, you know, to keep you in the loop. And, you know, here we are talking. So that really means a lot to me that you reached out.
Appreciate it. Always looking to support another good brewery. Well, Rhonda, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. I really appreciate it. And good luck in everything. And hope that we put this COVID behind us and have a great summer next year.
Yeah, that would be great. I hope so, too.
In this final beer gear of 2020, I'd like to tell you about another new opportunity to learn more about craft beer. If this was a typical year, I'd be telling you about the college class that I teach on the subject. However, 2020 is anything but typical, and my class is on hiatus until we get COVID-19 taken care of. So instead, I want to tell you about a new online course from the Cicerone Certification Program. Some of you are likely not familiar with Cicerone, so let me give you the background. The word Cicerone, C-I-C-E-R-O-N-E, designates hospitality professionals with proven experience in selecting, acquiring, and serving today's wide range of beers. In the wine world, the word sommelier designates those with proven expertise in selecting, acquiring, and serving wine, fine wine. At one time, some beer servers adopted the title beer sommelier to tie into the credibility of the wine world. But in the years since its founding, the Cicerone certification program has become the industry standard for identifying those with significant knowledge and professional skills in beer sales and service. The program was founded by Ray Daniels, a veteran of the craft beer industry. Daniels brought more than 25 years of brewing, judging, studying, and writing about beer to the task of managing the Cicerone program. Up until now, this program has focused on educating and certifying craft beer professionals, that is, the people who sell and serve beer. But now, the program has created its first course designed specifically for the consumer. It's called Explore Beer. In Explore Beer, Master Cicerone Pat Fahey chats about everything you've always wanted to know about beer, from the origins of Oktoberfest to the definition of light beer. Delivered in short, lively videos, the course equips you to better understand a beer list and get more enjoyment from every pint you taste. Explore Beer is divided into brief segments, so it's easy to make progress anytime you have a few minutes to spare, or knock it all in one session. In total, you can expect to complete this course in about 2 hours. At the end, you'll receive a digital badge that you can share with friends online. Everything produced by the Cicerone Certification Program is top-notch, and Explore Beer is no exception. The course costs $29. It's available at cicerone.org. It's not as good as my college class, but it has the advantage of actually being available. Though again, in my college class, we get to taste beer, so there's that. Our final quote of the month comes from Ernest Hemingway. Papa Hemingway says, "Always do sober what you said you'd do drunk. That will teach you to keep your mouth shut." Here's hoping we all have a better and happier and healthier New Year. Until next time, cheers.